I ran across a story this week that I want to share with everybody. And the more I thought about it, the funnier it got for me. It's not a very good story, but it was just, the ending is just hysterical to me. So I'm going to share this with you. So she spent the first day packing her belongings into boxes and crates and suitcases. And on the second day, she had the movers come in and collect all of her things. And on the third day, she sat down for the last time at their beautiful dining room table by candlelight, put on some soft background music, and feasted on a pound of shrimp and a jar of caviar and a bottle of Chardonnay. When she finished, she went into each and every room and deposited a few half-eaten shrimp shells dipped in caviar into the hollow of the curtain rods. She then cleaned up the kitchen and left. When her former husband returned with his new bride, all was bliss for a few days. And then slowly the house began to smell. They tried everything, cleaning, mopping, airing out the place. The vents were checked for dead rodents. The carpets were steam cleaned. Air fresheners were hung everywhere. Exterminators were brought in to set off gas canisters, during which they all had to move out for a few days. And at the end, they even paid to replace the expensive wool carpeting. Nothing worked. People stopped coming for visits. Repairmen refused to work in the house, and the maid quit. Finally, they couldn't take the stench any longer, and they decided to move. And a month later, even though they had cut the price in half, they still couldn't find a buyer for their stinky house. Word got out, and even the local realtors refused to return their phone calls. Finally, they had to borrow a huge sum of money to purchase a new home, and the ex-wife called one day to ask how things were going. And her ex-husband told her the saga of the rotting house, and so she listened politely and said that she missed her old home dreadfully, and would he be willing to reduce her divorce settlement, or she would be willing to reduce the divorce settlement just to get the house back. So knowing his ex-wife had no idea how bad the smell was, he agreed on a price that was about a tenth of what the house was worth, but only if she would sign the papers that day. She agreed. And within an hour, the lawyers delivered the paperwork, and so the man and his new bride smiled as they watched the moving company pack everything to take to their new home, including the curtain rods. Dan says, a woman scorned. Yeah. Was that funny or what? I know. So, I take it that all of you had a fabulous Christmas? Good. And you know, I look at trees, and I looked at all of our decorations, and last night there were new decorations up around the neighborhood that I hadn't seen before. And yesterday afternoon, I saw this man. I thought, why did he wait so long? You know, yesterday was fairly cold out here for us. And I saw him walking on his two-story roof, putting up more lights. I guess they got them or something. And with no safety belt or anything. And I was so intrigued by watching him move around because, you know, and as hard as I work not to anticipate anything, it's really hard to do that. So I decided that the only way I would get through that experience would not watch it. So I went in and did something else. But it gave me a strange, eerie feeling in my stomach, and I thought, what is his? Anyway. So, I'm glad that you all had a great holiday experience. We had a wonderful experience on Friday night, and it occurred to me that one of the things that that we really need to do is to be very grateful for not only our staff, but the people who help behind the scenes. And so, you know, the top of my list is Diana with your songs. Thank you so much for all that you bring together and put together for all of us. Jennifer on the piano. Oh, and Dan, what you do on the media and on the website, it just amazes me. And Dan is one of these guys that has this natural talent that, you know, what he touches works and he makes it look so easy. And I sit there going, anyway, so I'm in awe.
King Midas.
King Midas, yes. Yes. So, Dan, thank you. Teresa, doing our newsletter, thank you so much. And, of course, John, who isn't here today, but Ellen, who pinch hints with the coffee. You do a terrific job in putting all that together. And, of course, our core council people. Virgil is in the back. Alejandro is in the front. Thank you. Our practitioners, Alejandro, you all do a super job during the year, so thank you so much. See, and one of the things that I realized this week is that, and of course, part of this is thinking about this year-end stuff. And of course, I'm big on doing that because I love to do journal writing. And so one of the things I do is I go back through my journals to see what's happened this year and what changes have I made and, you know, what's been new and different this year and what do I want to change for next year and how do I want to close out the book of this year. And so in doing that, I realized that for us as a center, what we're doing here is we're building a lasting legacy. Now, I wasn't here when they first started this church. It was back in 1972, as I recall. And in 1972, a group of people came together and had a vision. And their vision was, we need to bring other religious scientists together. And in doing so, they, you know, studied together, they worked together, and they, you know, managed to find enough people to put together a charter, which includes 50 people, and eventually had enough money to hire a minister, in which they did. Now, back then, I'm sure that they did not envision us here today. Well, maybe they did. I don't know that for sure. But what I realized that our legacy is to carry on that tradition that they started back in 1972. Now, we need to do it for not only us, but for future generations, because I realized the changes that I have made in my life are because of what I've learned in religious science. See, what we teach here, you can't get anywhere else. You know, it's like Alejandro was talking about. It's like what we think about comes about. No one ever told me that, because my life would have been totally different had I been able to do this, say, back in high school or something. You know, and one of the things I realized is that we have this tendency to want to either rush our lives or rush through our lives, or we get stuck in our stuff. There's a billboard that is on my way to the center, and I go by it a lot. It's down on Blanco, and it's for an adult beverage, and I don't even remember what it is right now. But what the slogan is sip, savor, and repeat. And I realized that's what life is all about. You know, we need to take it in small doses. We need to really savor every experience. And then we need to keep repeating all of this in order to make or to get that, what I'm going to call that meaning and purpose that all of us are looking for in life. And you see, the interesting thing about meaning and purpose is that we're the ones that flavor our own lives with that meaning and that purpose. See, we're the ones that declare what's good and what's not. And we do that through perception. We do that through our thinking. And the more good that we can declare in our lives, the more of this good shows up for us. Because we know, as Ernest Holmes talks about in his book, is that the more that we focus on the good, the more this good shows up. The more that we can, you know, praise and appreciate what's going in our lives and going on in our lives, the more of that is going to show up. I had an interesting experience yesterday in the fact that my immediate family was visiting in Dallas, and because of having to work on Friday night, and of course today, I decided not to do that Dallas trip in one day. So my next door neighbor invited me over for dinner. And I had forgotten what it's like to dine with an all-Catholic family. So we went through the dinner blessing, and then went through all of the people that were not present with us. And I'm thinking, thinking, what about me? What about us? We're here. And not once was anything said about us being there. And I thought, isn't this interesting? The whole focus is on what's not or who's not there. And so consequently, I went into a funk. I went, and I thought, oh, this is another one of these firsts in having to experience, not only being with Catholics, but, it's like my first Christmas without, and I thought, why did I do this to myself? But, I didn't think about stuff like that. And, of course, that experience got me thinking about, after I got home yesterday, it's like, how we make decisions. For me, it was early teenager. And that decision for me was, because I can remember, I grew up with gals who, and you get to talking with girlfriends, they could hardly wait to grow up, get married, and have kids. I wanted to grow up, get out of North Dakota, and travel. And I thought, based on that decision, and I must have made that when I was maybe 10, 11, or 12 years old, I am reeling at the consequences of that decision right now. Because I decided not to have children, I don't have an immediate family. I always said, I've got plenty of nieces and nephews, I'm covered, and our family is covered, and the name is being carried on. I don't have to do that. I never once thought that there would come a time in my life where I would be alone. And I felt that aloneness yesterday. And, of course, the whole time I'm going through this, I'm thinking, this too shall pass, this too shall pass. And then I discovered the Christmas story was being shown 24 hours on TBS. And that took care of that. I turned it on, I got involved, and I thought, oh, yes, an opportunity to be able to laugh and to be able to, to get out of my stuff. And to be able to experience something new and different. So when I went back to my journal last night, I was thinking about, okay, so that was one decision I made that I'm now consequenting or having a consequence of that decision. How many other decisions did I make back when I was a teenager that I'm just now beginning to experience? And when I asked that question, nothing would come. But I had the strangest dreams last night. Right after I left home and got to California, I went to work for an attorney. And so part of the evening is I was trying to type up something for one of the attorneys. I was trying to sell what I used to sell as a second job. I used to sell a line of crystal china and stemware. And so somewhere in there, this huge order came in, and it came to the office. And I'm going, why did I do that? And so this whole thing was so convoluted. And I'm going, why didn't I dream about something that happened last week? Why is it that, it felt like my whole past was being experienced in one night. So I woke up really early this morning, and in the process of doing my journal work this morning, I took a look at that and I thought, part of what I really, really need to focus on is with the stuff that I've considered what's new and different in my life this year, is to be really grateful for my life. Because, I live in a beautiful home. I drive a terrific car. Part of it is because it always works. Thank you, God. And the other thing is that I realize that I have the wherewithal to be able to not only maintain the car and the house, but that I can experience whatever it is that I want to experience in life right now, and how privileged I feel to be able to be in a career where I don't ever have to quit if I don't want to. Or I can retire tomorrow. And I thought, you know, there aren't that many people that have that kind of luxury of choice. And I realized that the more educated we are, the more we know, the more choices we have. The less we know, the fewer choices and options we have. So in doing, again, my journal work this morning, as I realized, I said, okay, so what I really want to experience is I want to experience total financial freedom. So I said, out of curiosity, I wonder how close I am. So I got out, you know, and this is like at 4 o'clock this morning, right? So I've got plenty of time to do all this stuff. So I'm digging through all of my papers, and I'm going through all of the stuff that I need to pull out in order to find figures. And, of course, none of them are up to date, you know, because I get quarterly, you know, statements and stuff. But it got all totaled up, and I'm $100 into my financial freedom fund. I went, yeah! You know, so it's like one of the decisions I made this last year was that I wanted to be totally financially free. And I, you know, and I stood there at my desk and I jumped up and I went, yeah. And all the dogs go, wah, 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 wah. You know, they're all into it because they don't hear those kinds of sounds early in the morning. But I thought, isn't it interesting how we always experience what our thoughts are? We always experience what our decisions are and how those consequences come up. So when we talk about closing out the last chapter of 2010, you know, I want you to pay close attention to how grateful you are for everything that's going on in your life, the good, the bad, the indifferent. Be thankful that you're living in the United States of America. You know, we don't get how people live in a lot of other countries. But a couple of weeks ago, I got an email from someone who kind of brought up that experience. And it was pictures of, actually, it was a video of a man in India who, of course, is very good on the internet, very good on media, and quit his job to feed the homeless in India. And they showed how he cooked these meals, and I was stunned. You know, during the preparation of the meal yesterday, my neighbor and I were complaining about not having two ovens. You know, and you know, why didn't they put double ovens in these houses for us? You know, well, why didn't they? So I'm watching how this guy is preparing this meal, and he's, number one, sitting on a floor and using what I think is called it's like the little hibachi, and there's a special name for it. It's one that, you know, gets very, very hot, and he had two of them. And his working surface was a two by six, maybe. It's a board about 6 inches wide and about that long, 4 feet long, sitting on top of a stack of bricks and bricks on one end and an overturned pot on the other. And he's cutting all these veggies and doing all these things and then popping them into his little pot that's sitting on his hibachi. And then he and one of his helpers is carrying this big old pot. And it looked like a pot that I would probably have thrown away years ago. I would not have kept a pot looking that way. It was dented, ugly, black on the outside. And he's carrying it out to his car so that he has something. He's got this big pot that he's serving, whatever it is, to all of his people. And I'm complaining about not having a double oven. And I thought, thank you for my single oven. So what we need to do is take a look at our lives and really be grateful for everything that is in our lives. And include your family, your friends, your career, you know, everything about you, everything that makes up your life, is take a single look at everything and absolutely just take a moment and praise it. and be appreciative of it. You know, along with gratitude, we need to check out our attitudes to be able to look to see what's wonderful in our lives and list them all. One of the things that, again, another video I watched. You know, I don't know what it is about the holiday season, but everybody sends you YouTube things to watch, you know. And one of the ones that I watched was a gal that is into public speaking, and she's on the circuit. And she is talking about heart disease and what causes heart disease. And it's not food, it's not lack of exercise, it's lack of love. And so she goes through a whole routine about how to put more love in your life. And she tells about how when you open up your heart, not only to yourself, to someone else, and she said, if you want to do it in code, so you don't have to run around saying to everybody, I love you, you just go, zoot, because that's the code word. So zoot, 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 and zoot it into your heart, and your heart, and your heart. And what happens is that when you zoot someone else, is that it fills up their heart, and they have this sensation of love. So I was so taken with her code word zoot that I emailed her and I said, what a terrific idea. And I got the email back that said she was out of town, but her assistant sent it with, you know, and she explained all of that. And as she signed off, she said, and sent with zooties. And I thought, oh, I love it, zooties. So part of the process with the attitude is to send out lots of zooties to everybody. You know, send out lots of love and feel how that is. And rather than, you know, even to send out love, is to use that exercise to feel good about who and what we are. You see, the more things that we can list that we're interested in, that we're grateful for, that is wonderful in our lives, what happens is that it cleans up the stuff that's going on inside of us. Because then we can truly raise and praise who and what we are. And in the process of doing that, we feel better. And in the process of that, it clears out the arteries, the cells, the fibers, the heart, and all of that other stuff. And for a lot of us, we need to do a lot of cleaning. We need to allow all of that to be removed and to be put into, you know, just sent out of our lives, be put away from us. So in lifting, not only, you know, being in a sense of gratitude and attitude, but what we really need to do is we need to lift the altitude of our thinking. We need to think not only more positively, but we need to allow ourselves to be elevated in everything that we do. Now, for a lot of us, we don't know how to do that. And for a lot of us, we get sucked into something and it's really hard to turn that around. It's really hard to be able to get out of something once we're sucked into it. And so part of that process is realizing that once you're in it, is to keep yourself from staying in it and to figure out ways of getting out of it. And part of it is almost pre-thinking about all that, is to pre-think yourself out of it so that it doesn't stay around for so very long. And also in the process is to, while you're doing all of this, is to allow a new dream to come through. You know, when we ask what's new and different for next year, we have to get those ideas. And when you get the ideas, jot them down, because those are God ideas. And they're all those kinds of ideas that will assist us in not only experiencing life on a whole new different level, but what happens is that it'll bring a new sense of joy and wonder and delight into our lives. I don't know about you, but I am so ready for something new and different. For something great, glorious, and wonderful that will keep me in joy, that will keep me in a sense of a feeling so much better about what it is that's going on. So I know that when we do this, that it automatically allows for a time of spending what I'm going to call quiet time, when we take the time to enjoy our own solitude, take the time to contemplate our neighbors. See, one of the things that I don't do a lot, because my mother frowned on it, so she kept telling me, don't stop your daydreaming. Well, it's in daydreaming that you get the new ideas. So I've decided that part of my practice is not only going to be in meditation and contemplation and in journal work, but I just want to take some time to daydream and to ask some questions like, what if? What if I decide to, and then go on from there? And what if? And see what happens. And play the game. You know, Dr. Scott, who was my teacher, used to say, we need to play pretend a whole lot more often. Let's pretend what it's like. Let's pretend, you know, and in playing this what-if game, put ourselves into that place of saying, okay, if we do this, this will happen. If I don't do this, what's going to happen there? So that in that time of solitude, we can take that time to rest and to renew, to ask the important questions. Because, you know, if we don't ask those important questions, next year is going to be exactly the same as this year. I don't want that to happen in my life. And I know for some of us that this week is going to be what I'm going to call a very quiet, and in a lot of people in business call it a dead week. Well, use that time for your own creativity. You know, when you're sitting in the office and if it's quiet, play a what-if game. Play a game that says, this is my time of silent contemplation, and I want to figure out not only something new and different for myself for next year, but to figure out something that's going to get me so excited, so thrilled, that it will get me up early in the morning and keep me up late at night, because it is something that so fills my life to satisfaction, a tremendous amount of fulfillment, and allows me to experience more of what my meaning and purpose is in life. See, all of us have those kinds of capacities. What we need to do is to open them up and allow them a greater, maybe entrance, a greater expression through our lives. How much time are you willing to spend for something new and different for next year? How much time are you willing to spend to experience some of the changes that you want to make? And let me encourage you to sit down with, you know, your journals, with pencil and paper, and jot some of those things down. Some of us hear the song in silence. Some of us hear the voices in silence. And some of us just hear the silence. But whatever that is, open up to include a few more areas and see what happens, so that when you do your year-end contemplation next year, you will be able to say, oh, thank God I spent the time this year to be able to open up to something new and something different. So, let's put some of this into practice. So as we focus on the beautiful music that Jennifer plays, let's recognize that we are in the very presence of the living Spirit of God, and that we are in very holy, sacred space. And so let's know that as we open up to allow this glorious presence to be expressed in who and what we are, we feel the love that God is, we feel the support, we feel that deep connection, and we feel our heart expanding and as we tap into our physical being, we can feel that sense of well-being opening up, being more of who and what we are. And we know that all is right with the world. Because as we allow this deep connection to permeate everything that we are, we can feel this peace that this whole season is around. We can feel this sense of love and the support that each one of us has for each other. And that the value of gathering in a place like this is that we can connect and support each other and feel the support for others and from others. And it allows us to be able to step into our own courage in such a way that sometimes it won't allow us to happen, or it won't allow happen when we're alone. So I invite you to think in terms of how to close out this year with gratitude, with praise, with appreciation, with blessing. And how each one of us can step into this new year as something new and something different, and experience more of what life is like, only enhanced and multiplied and stepped up in vibration. So that no matter what it is that's going on in our lives, we can be truly grateful. And in that gratitude, we know that everything in our lives is truly perfect, whole, and complete because we have thought about it, we've programmed it to be so, and because of it, everything in our life always works. And so knowing this to be the truth of who and what I am and the truth of who and what you are, we accept it. And in doing so, we celebrate it. And in that celebration of it, we release it, we let it go, and together we say, and so it is. And so it is.